I'm sitting here with Kate. It's Wednesday. We're recording for Thursday's show a little bit earlier than usual. Kate, how you feeling?
I am sweating like an oxen in here. Okay.
You look good, though. You look like you're glowing.
I have this makeup, this bronzer that has a shimmer to it that I put on all the heightened edges of my face. And whenever I do, everyone at the office goes, "You're glowing." And I say, "Thank you." But it's fake.
You look like you're happy, like you're ready to pop. Before the show, we were talking about... I just kind of mentioned, I was like, "You're actually having a baby."
I know.
And you're
Holy
like,
fuck.
I'm freaking out. Are you nervous at all?
I'm really nervous, but I will say, not to get all shmushy, because I've been complaining and talking about the things I'm afraid of and blah, blah, blah. But I have never been more excited for anything in my life. Like, I cannot wait to meet this little dude. I cannot wait to hold him in my arms and hang out with him. And I'm just, I know it's going to be hard, but like now that we're in the final nitty gritty, every pain I feel, I'm like, oh, I hope this is it, because I just like cannot fucking wait. Like, I'm so excited.
It was so crazy yesterday. Kate had me, or 2 days ago when you were in, you had me touch your stomach when you were having, what was it called? What
kind of Braxton Hicks contraction, yeah.
A Braxton Hicks contraction. That's when just your stomach goes hard as a rock, or what
is
that?
Yeah, they're like practice contractions. They don't quite feel like the real thing, but it's like your body kind of practicing, tensing up across, because your whole body, like your entire stomach will become like this muscle that pushes the baby down and out.
Really?
So it's like practice ones where your stomach, it like becomes literally like hard as a fucking boulder. And so I made you. I'm like, touch the boulder. Sorry.
It's
Sorry
weird.
I did that.
No, that's great. It's weird, too. Like, we were sitting over by the desk, and you were eating some disgusting like Campbell's, some shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, does a baby need this much sodium? For Christ's sake.
I've totally ruined
it. He's just going to come out a salt packet. But you were like, look at my stomach. Look at my stomach. And you could see his little, like, fist
punching through.
Punching
like,
at
you
the
can
thing.
See exactly where his feet and heels and shit are, because you can, like, see the outline of the foot. It's crazy. Yeah.
It's fucking nuts. Getting I'm close. So excited for you. And it could happen any day. You're due the 20th. I'll be there.
Yeah, come on in.
In the delivery
Please,
room.
Yeah.
With a GoPro.
Punch my asshole.
Have
Help
you,
me.
Have you, oh, so someone actually wrote on Twitter, Kate was worried about shitting.
Yeah.
Shitting her butt out.
Yeah.
And they say the doctor puts a fist on your butthole. Is that what happens?
Apparently, you can be like, please, somebody fist my asshole, and then,
oh.
I don't know.
Jeez, well, anyway, we're excited for you. We're very excited for this to happen. And we were trying to figure out yesterday what we were going to talk about on today's show. And one of the things that came up was, like, Kate moved to this city by herself. She came up here in her 30s from Philadelphia to New York, not really knowing anyone. The two people who you – well, you knew a few people, right?
Well, I had lived here before when I was married.
Right.
But that was, like, in another life. And all those – I was terrified to move up here again because I was moving to a new borough. And I didn't talk to any of those people anymore. Those were his people, kind of. So I was terrified to run into anyone from my old life. I didn't want to run into him. So it was starting completely fresh, completely new. I didn't know anybody. I moved in with a couple Barstool people and was like, yeah.
You started fresh in your 30s. And I think...
Completely.
And so we got onto this conversation talking about like how to make friends in your 20s and 30s as an adult.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a good topic to have because I feel like for a lot, like what any person wants, but especially what gay people want, is they want to find someone who they can relate to, whether that be a singular person or whether that be a group of people. You want it as a child and you want it as an adult because for gay people, at least at your core, you feel different. You feel like you don't truly fit in with straight people, so you hold on to this hope that once you find more people who you think will be like you, once you find that group, you'll finally fit in and everything will be great. And when that doesn't happen, it's devastating. So I think what a lot of people do, a lot of gay people do, is they change a part of themselves in order to fit in with a group that they think they're supposed to fit in with, which is fundamentally going against what the whole living your truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through that whole process when I came to New York of trying to figure out who I was and meet these people who I thought I was supposed to meet, and I'd have this great group of friends and everything would be great. And the reality of the matter is that doesn't really happen. And I think for a lot of people when they move to a new city, gay or straight, that doesn't happen. We're going to focus on the gay aspect of it, obviously.
Yeah.
So I thought what we'd do is I would kind of talk about like me moving from Boston to New York, what I expected was going to happen versus what actually happened, and then some tips on how to make friends in your 30s. And then you can also talk about, as I cover my mouth, you can also talk about like your experience, because I feel like for a woman who's changing careers and really uprooting her life to kind of try something different, you're very fearless because you are unafraid. And I think one of the big themes in finding new friends and starting new is – like fear. That's what prevents people from doing things. And you don't have any of that.
Going out on your own, leaving your old group and like going out on your own. And yeah. I've become very comfortable over the years going out by myself, traveling by myself, like big trips, long trips,
yeah,
far away trips by myself. And there's kind of an art to it, actually. And I do, every time I do, you know, obviously things have changed now, but I get a lot of DMs from men and women being like, how do you do that by yourself? Or like even here in New York City, going like getting comfortable going to like a comedy club by yourself or doing things on your own. Because once you're comfortable with yourself, then it's so much easier to make friends. Right. Like they kind of come hand in hand, these things. But I can see too, especially for, I feel like for a lot of people in the gay community, we were also talking about this last night. The cities are kind of the meccas, like where you go right. to make it happen. If you're from smaller towns, like it's a rite of passage almost. Finally, I'm going to the city. I'm going to find my tribe. And
it doesn't happen. And I, you know what? I think it doesn't happen for the majority of people.
And it can be, you're right.
And I think it's so devastating. And mm-hmm. it's like these feelings of like the past year, everything has kind of been shut down. So yeah. you've been able Super. To put life on hold. And while yeah. certain anxieties have built up, other ones have subsided. Mm-hmm. Like the what am I going to go out? What am I going to do has subsided. But now that New York things are open up to 25%, I find myself in the same situation that I've been in since I moved here in 2014, which is like,
well, if you look on social media, it's like everybody's at the party but you somehow. And you're like, wait, you know, social media paints this picture right. that there are all these tribes and there is all this stuff and you're missing out somehow. And that's why I think it's really important to learn how to be comfortable doing stuff on your own, because that's how slowly you start to build community and figure out like who you are and who you want to connect with. And you get to design that without like just following the crowd. And
but you're comfortable. See, like I've never been comfortable being alone, but you don't mm-hmm. give a shit.
I used to very much, but over time, no. Like I actually, it almost makes you selfish in a way, because now I kind of prefer it
to be alone. Because like, you would go to like the bars, and this is last year. You would go to yeah. a bar and like write and what well, write, quote unquote. You'd drink. You'd say you would go there.
You
to write.
Look at my journal. It makes sense on page one, and by page five, it's like just yeah. like blur. It's like slurred.
And
writing.
It's also so cool to say that you're writing in a bar.
Yeah, I'm, oh, just, I'm in just the bar writing.
That's so like emo writing. But what was that movie that you were telling me about last night?
Well, it's like a 7-part docu-series by Martin Scorsese about Fran Lebowitz, who's this. She came to New York in the height of the, I want to say like 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and lesbian, found her group, found her tribe, like, and just befriended. She had friends in the arts. Like, she's sitting yeah. down at a diner with Duke Ellington, you know, like that kind of person who just had her hands in everything artsy and everything culture in New York City. And she was talking about that too, that it's like a rite of passage almost. You leave your small town, she was from small town Jersey, and you come here looking for that. Like people go to the cities looking for that. So finding, she's still a bit of a loner too. I was yeah. watching it and I was like, I can see me being her when I'm old. Like just like
Katie
happy
Leibowitz.
As a clam, just cruising around the city with my little cart. Whatever, but
with your car. Yeah, so I came yeah. here in 2014. I had lived in Franklin, Mass.
Yeah,
I had graduated college. I had just come out, and I remember being like, "Oh God, like what the fuck am I doing in my hometown?" I would mm-hmm. be with like my brother and like my hometown friends. I'm like, I got to get out of here.
Did you feel when you came out in your hometown like? For the most part, were people surprised or were they like, yeah, we had an idea? Or
no
it was
one.
Like, eh.
Well, what I found out last time I was home was I recorded an episode of this podcast with my buddies from home. And I had this big grand plan to like put it out. And like we had this honest conversation, but they all ended up getting too drunk.
Right.
So like we couldn't use any of it.
Yeah.
But one of the things I found out in that conversation was that I was actually outed like behind my back by this kid.
Right.
So some people knew, some didn't. But when I came out in my hometown, I was like, I got to move out. I got to go to Boston. I'm going to go to big Boston.
Why did you feel that way?
Because you feel trapped.
Okay.
There's no one you can relate. It's like what I said. There's no one you can relate to.
Because you didn't have any. There was nobody else who was like, hey, I'm gay too. Or
no,
like, no,
but there okay. were. But like the kids who were like that in the hometown were people who I couldn't relate to.
Right.
So I went to Boston with these grand plans of like, I'm going to make this great gay friend group. And it's going to be awesome. And I did make friends. I lived near Boston College. Mm-hmm. Which was good. Which was good.
Yeah.
But like at my core, when I met these kids, like I knew I like didn't relate to them. And
right.
there was this like dread in me like, oh, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like now I can't. I think what happens with a lot of gay people is you're stuck in this limbo of you don't really fit in with straight people, you don't really fit in with gay people, and there's the hope that you'll fit in with gay people, so you try and force it to happen.
Yeah.
Which is what I did, but
you
luckily...
You change who you are a little bit.
Exactly. I gayed it up, whatever. So luckily, well, I was only there for 7 months until I moved to New York, so it was like a fresh reset kind of deal.
Right.
When I moved to New York... The same exact thing happened.
And was moving here just for Barstool?
No. So moving here, I moved here in 2015 to get a job on the David Letterman show.
Okay.
Which was like, I use the term job lightly. It was like slave labor. You were like a page. It was an absolutely terrible program. This woman, Jennifer, ran it. She was a witch. Just the worst person in the world. She mistreated everyone who worked there.
Yeah.
You got paid shit. So that's why I moved here. I moved here with these like grand plans of like, I'm going to host a talk show and blah, blah, blah. And this will be my start, which obviously didn't work out. But then again, here we are now. So what do you know? But when I moved to New York, I had trouble meeting people because part of it was that I was in a relationship at the time and it was a really young relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And like you'll find out in – well, you know, like in straight relationships, if you're hanging out with guys all the time, like your significant other will be like questioning that.
Yeah, it
you
know starts what I mean? To get in their head a little
so
bit.
So it's like sure. that. Like if I had gone out all the time with like gay guys, my significant other would have like questioned that.
Yeah.
So what I did was I just didn't even try. So like the first like 3 years I was here, I just didn't even try and make friends.
Oh,
it, you know what I mean? Like, and so I hung out with like just this dude who turned out to be a piece of shit.
Right.
The entire time, and that like stunted like my friend group, my friend growth. But when I eventually did get out, it was just more of like the same thing where you're going out with people. And I was young, I was 27, 28, so I was still carrying around. I was, I want to say, not like immature, but like judgmental in the sense of like people's sexuality because I wasn't comfortable with my own.
Yep.
So, like, if I met someone who was like, super comfortable with themselves, super gay.
You're like, this is a little
super
much.
Into this. I was like, this is a little much. But yeah. In reality, it's like you have to look beyond someone's sexuality and just like accept them for who they are. Now some of the people I hang out with are the funniest people in the world.
Right.
And it's like you walk around and we would look like we have nothing in common.
So you moved to New York with these grand plans, but you end up kind of bogged down in this 3-year relationship. You're not making any friends because of it. Finally, you guys break up. But you still kind of aren't comfortable enough to start finding your group, finding
right.
your thing.
Right, and it's because I just wasn't, like, open-minded, and I didn't try. It was, like, 2015 to now was even a little different, but I just didn't try to, like, make friends. I didn't know how to make friends.
So when did that start changing? Like, when did you start finding, like, do you
a
have...
A month ago.
Really?
No, I don't know if it's, like, changes. Just as you get older, you realize things. Like, as I've gotten older, I've realized that... And I think a lot of people realize that you need to be more open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get rid of preconceived notions about, you know, sexuality. You don't have to hook up with your friends. You don't have to compromise who you are. You can take your time.
Yeah.
Like, being nice to someone is something that is so underrated.
Yes.
Like, just being nice. And as you get older, you realize, like, how valuable that is. Like,
just
there's no
you texting me off work, offline, and being like, hey, how are you doing? Just thinking of you. It means, like, especially at our age.
Yes.
I don't know. That sounds corny. But I'm like, God, that's really lovely. Thanks for checking in. Like, it means something.
It's like Fights' girlfriend the other day. I texted her. She was telling me she was she's like going, she's switching careers and she's going through an interview process. And I texted her. I was like, hey, how'd the interview go? And she like had tears in her eyes.
Yeah.
I was like, that's so underrated just to be nice to someone and like make them feel good. And I feel like as you get older, you realize that there's no reason to be a fucking cunt.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard. Like part of it too, there's this hesitance, I think, to make friends once you're in your 30s. Because, God damn it, we're tired at the end of the day. And there's, like, this commitment phobia. Like, I'm like, I want to start befriending these people, but I don't want the commitment of having to hang out all the time. Like, but so there's that, too. But you have to get over it and just be like, nah, you can just know you can be comfy saying no thanks when you don't want to and yes when you want. And finding those people that don't care.
Have you made friends since you moved to New York? My thing is, like, I don't have time. It's like I do have time, but I just don't care enough to actually make friends.
Well, so little things that helped me when I first moved was finding an established corner bar near me where I felt really comfortable, where I got to know. I made it a point to be really friendly to the staff. and be super comfortable with the staff and they knew me kind of thing.
This is in Astoria.
So for me, that was in Astoria. Right on the other side of my block, there was this place that I felt really comfortable where I would go to write, where I knew if there was a weirdo kind of hanging around, like I knew they'd be like, hey, shoo, leave her alone. She's writing or whatever. Where I could tell them about my day and I would ask about theirs. Like it was people to talk to.
It was therapy.
Kind of. It was kind of therapeutic. Yeah, sitting there, we're each having a beer and it's like, we're not super invested in each other, but that was nice to know. And like if I locked myself out and I had to wait for a blah, blah, I knew I could go there and hang out and they didn't expect me to
order. I locked myself out. That happens like regularly.
You have no idea. But it just felt good to start establishing a local community presence. And the other thing that really helped, there's a couple things. And I know this is going to sound so corny. Volunteering, finding something you're interested in and volunteering in it is such a great fucking way to meet interesting people and friends and get new opportunities. I would volunteer. I love Astoria Park. So every couple weeks they had to have like, come plant daffodil bulbs in the park. Come do
this,
come do that.
You're such an old lady.
And like, you start chatting with people as you do it though. Yeah. And it's like afterwards people are like, well, does anybody want to grab a beer? And a few people would be like, yeah, you know what? Let's go grab a beer. And I got really into bicycling.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
If you look online, you'll find like bike meetups and hey, we're all going to bike to that giant globe where like the Men in Black ships are. And I'm like, all right. Afterwards, people are like, does anybody want to go get tacos or something? And you're like, yeah. And then finally was the bocce. I joined an indoor bocce league, which COVID killed. But my bocce team ended up being the kindest, most awesome people who that became like a real friend group too. But it's putting yourself out there. Like I still like walking to the first night of bocce, not knowing anyone on my team. Like I was like sweating. I was like so nervous. And then it ended up being an awesome thing. So
when you went through your divorce, were all of your friends tied in together?
Yes. And
so how did they get split up?
Essentially I feel like I lost everything. I feel like I just let it all go and I lost everything. Like, because I loved his family, his extended family, like his nieces, his friends, I loved. I thought his friends were awesome and they kind of adopted me as like one of their good friends too. And I like genuinely loved them all. And then our Marine buddies, all of our Marine buddies.
He was in the Marines too.
Yep. We were both in the Marines and we shared the same set of Marine buddies. And so I kind of, like an iceberg, I kind of broke off and was like, I'll let him have it all. Like, I just.
But
like,
why though, if he's the one who's in the wrong?
Because.
And why would people side with
him? I mean, he'd tell you otherwise, I'm sure. But
No, but it's like, why would people side with him? I just find it interesting because, like, I'm thinking about when I went through my breakup, it was like, how do you split up your friends? Luckily, we didn't have friends, so that was very easy. But if you do.
Well, part of it, some of his old friends reach out now and actually are really, and we keep being like, one of these days we're going to meet up and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, because things can't. But at the time, I didn't want to talk shit. I didn't want to put them in a weird place where they ever felt like they had to choose. And I didn't want to them to know what was going on kind of thing. So like I didn't.
What do you mean them going
I just didn't
on?
Want to talk shit. I didn't feel like it was anybody else's business. And so I wanted them, if they had this vision of him, I wanted them to keep it and to keep their friendship with him exactly as it was. I didn't want to mess that up. So I kind of bowed out and walked away from that life.
Dude,
and was like,
fuck that.
And was like starting over. I felt like it was like just like the classy way to go. And but it was really hard. I feel like a lot of like it felt like a death. Like I felt like I lost a lot. And then you're right, like starting all over. But one of the blessings, the biggest blessings of that divorce was that that's when I started to learn how to be on my own. Because like the last year or so of my marriage, I started to be alone all the time because he just was never around.
Yep.
And I was up here in New York and I'm like, what do I do? So I started getting in my little Honda CRV, going on road trips.
Which you had until a week ago.
Which I had until like a week ago. And I started teaching myself how to, and I got really into like the comedy scene here. I started just, you know what? You're alone. Deal with it. Start going to these places. Rip the Band-Aid off if it makes you uncomfortable. And after you do it enough times, you start to really enjoy it.
Right.
It's really not so bad. And then you start to see other loners and you start chatting them up. And like, I don't know. It just kind of became like.
It's funny too, because like when you talk about being alone and getting comfortable with it, I remember when I first came to New York. Actually, it was when I first started working with Large. He was like, I have this bar I go to all the time. It's called Arturo's. I go there alone. And I was like, fuck yeah. I was like, I want to have my Arturo's.
Yeah.
And so, like, I went into this bar on the Upper West Side alone, and I sat down, and I was just so like, I'm alone. Yep. And it was such a terrible experience. But, like, just those 4 years ago to now, I feel like a lot of it is just being comfortable with yourself and being comfortable being alone.
Totally. And just being open to having like knowing your boundaries with other people if you kind of want to be alone, but just knowing how to make small talk with people. And you never know where it goes. You meet the most interesting people. But like some of my – I wrote a couple down. After my divorce, I really branched out. I flew out to the Northwest and did Washington State and Oregon by myself. I rented a car, and I spent like a week and a half just all these different towns. I ended up
– How old were you?
This was maybe 4 years ago. And I was like 30, 31, 32. Well, I guess I was 30.
You date yourself?
I wound up making so many interesting friends in a bar one night. I befriended a guy who was like, oh, let me show you around. The next day, he had a bike. Me and him went on a bike tour. He showed me all the cool spots you normally would never see. Other people I overheard talking about going tubing on the Snoqualmie River or whatever the next day. And I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. I love tubing. They're like, bitch, come with us. Next thing you know, I'm like out east in the mountains.
Were you embarrassed though? With like, I feel like if I was alone at a bar, I would like make up a fake backstory as to why I was alone at that bar. Or were you just like, no, like I'm just on vacation alone.
I'm just on vacation. I'm traveling the coast right now. I have a car. Like I'm like whatever. I'm staying in hostels. And
that's
like,
such hippie stuff.
But people are so like you underestimate how friendly people are and how when people love their city and their town. Oh my God, you don't know this area? Let me show you.
Yeah.
But like people love it. So like I went tubing with strangers. I ended up like my first Valentine's Day alone after the divorce.
Oh God.
I didn't want to be by myself. I said, I found this.
You got a hooker?
Tiffany's. Tiffany's lamps, you know?
Yeah.
There was this big art exhibit on Tiffany's lamps in Richmond, Virginia. I'd never been to Richmond. I was living down in Philly at the time. And I was like, I'm going to treat myself to Tiffany's for Valentine's Day. I got in my car. I drove to Richmond, Virginia, got a nice hotel for myself.
Hotel.
Spent a beautiful day looking at the Tiffany's lamps. That night, I looked up online open mic nights. So I found the local comedy scene. I actually ended up doing a 5-minute set on Heartbreak. Befriended the other comedians because I like said I was out of town. They ended up taking me out that night for karaoke. They bought my dinner. I still talk to those people to this day.
You're
like,
kidding.
It's like, I don't know. I'm rambling, but.
No, I did an alone vacation last year for the first time ever. I went to Provincetown. I got a motorcycle from this motorcycle dealership that I have a relationship with. It's a beautiful Ducati. And I went down and I was like, you know what? I knew too when I got there. I was like, it's going to take one drink and then I'm going to be fucking drinking. I was like preparing myself for like the big spend.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'll just go down, whatever. It was not an easy ride. It was like 3.5 hours on a motorcycle at like 80 miles an hour is like an exhausting thing to do.
Yes.
So I drive down. I go from Foxborough all the way down the Cape. It was beautiful to P-Town. I'm screaming around on this bike. It's like a race car. It's so much fun. I finally get there. I get off. I go to a restaurant. I sit down. I go. I have a lobster roll. Don't fucking laugh. Why are you already laughing? I go. All right. Let me just have one vodka soda. And so I ended up having a drink. I had a few, and I was like, all right. Let me hop back on the bike. Go to the beach. So I wasn't drunk, but you go to the beach, go back, and then I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I might as well stay here for the night.
Yes.
Treat myself. So I walk into this place called the Brass Key on P-Town. Mm-hmm. Very nice, like, boutique hotel. I think this was late August last year. So the water was warm. Like, it was gorgeous. And I go into the Brass Key, and I'm like, do you guys have any rooms available? And they're like, for when? I was like, right now.
Yeah.
And they're like, we do have one room. It's $475.
Ooh.
And I was like, ooh, I can do 250. And the guy looks at me and he's like, okay.
Wow.
So I ended up getting this gorgeous suite at the Brass Key overlooking the pool, right in town for a night. And I befriended, like you said, befriending strangers. I ended up befriending this couple there. I was just kind of sitting by the pool having a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And people see you're alone and like they want to talk to you.
Hey, what's your deal?
Yeah. I ended up just hanging out and like boozing with these guys all night. We went to a couple bars and walked around and blah, blah, blah. And it was an absolute blast. But that's something that I would never have been able to do or have the confidence to do like 5 years ago. Because the thing that you don't realize is that nothing like matters. And like people's nothing matters. And people's judgments don't matter. Wallow267, who works at this company, he was in prison for 20 years. Mm-hmm. He came out. He hosts a podcast called Million Dollars Worth of Game, which is the biggest rap podcast on the planet. They're huge. They have every big star you can have. He's also a motivational speaker where he speaks to colleges and youth groups and at-risk youth about, you know, molding your life and going in the right direction. One of the things he talked about last week was called, which I actually blogged, it was called the fuck it button.
Yeah.
And it was like, once you realize that what people think of you doesn't matter and you don't have to hold on to these judgments, you say fuck it and you just go.
So freeing.
It's so freeing. And like for the first time in my life last year, maybe I had it a couple times, like I had that fuck it button in P-Town. Like I was yucking it up. And usually when I'm having a conversation with someone, like I'm constantly like analyzing how it's going. I don't know if anyone else is like this.
Yeah,
like,
you're kind of more closed off than people think.
Right,
sometimes.
But it's not even like you're the same way. It's like if I'm talking to you, I'm like, oh, what do they think about what I just said? Yeah. What does this person think about this? And I was like, you know what? Like, am I coming off too drunk? Am I coming off this way? Am I sitting too close? Am I doing this? It's like once you let go of that, it's so fucking nice. And so freeing. And I feel like I finally did that at P-Town last year.
And that's the beautiful thing about learning to be on your own is when you become your truest self, because nobody has any preconceived notions of you. There's no expectation of where this is going to go with whoever you're hanging out with or meeting afterwards. So you don't have to like pretend to be anything you're not. There's this comfort if just be your fucking self and start to meet people, branch out a little bit. It seems really scary. And then you're amazed at how much more authentic those friendships are than if you're trying, you already have a group picked out and you're like trying to get into it or you're trying to this or that. Like, I don't know.
And I'm also not trying to force it anymore either.
Like right.
I went through this phase where I was like, I need to have a group of gay friends.
Yeah.
Like that I'm close with. I need to be with these people. This is what will bring me happiness in my life. Like, this is what's going to make like my life fulfilled.
You were trying to force friendships to happen. Oh, yeah. You were trying to like force friend groups and force your way into these groups that weren't.
And what I realized is that you just need like one or two good friends to hang out with. And that's like really all that fucking matters.
Yeah. And if you want to expand, again, volunteer, join a club, and get some kind of hobby that you really love. And then dorky as it is, whatever it is, like me, people are so, she's like tweeting about bicycling again. Yeah. But whatever. Like
people love it though.
You find your group and it really does open up whole new worlds for you and opens up your odds of creating friends who maybe have a beach house or a mountain house or like it expands. You're like, I'm still trying to find someone here who has a house in the Hamptons kind of
and
thing.
I had to slow myself down too, because I thought that like when I go home, and I think for like a lot of gay guys, when you go home and you're around straight friends, it was like you see their lives start to progress.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my friends are all getting married. They're all having kids.
Yep.
Like they have houses. I'm like, it's nice to have the freedom to sleep until 3 p.m.
Yes.
on a Saturday, but you feel like a loser. So there is this rush to kind of like accelerate your life in certain areas,
yep.
but you just have to take your time. So like I mentioned before, if there was a couple pieces of advice that I could give you guys for how to make friends if you're moving to a new city, the first would just be to be open-minded to different types of people. The second would be to get rid of any preconceived notions about sexuality. The person who you wouldn't want to hook up with doesn't mean you can't be friends with them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Some people who are out there or act a different way, embrace them for who they are, get to know them because you never
know.
Your
life will be so much more colorful and fun for it.
Exactly.
That's so true.
Because you'll get to know people for who they actually are, which is a great thing. And then you don't have to hook up with your friends. You don't have to compromise who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And don't set like unrealistic goals. So don't like say, I need to have this group of large friends, whatever. Just let things come to you naturally. And it's much more fulfilling rather than forcing it. I used to hang out.
It's easier said than done, because there are moments, like there were moments of loneliness so intense at the same time that I just like, oh my God, I'm like so lonely I could die right now. But
yeah.
Like, because I wasn't trying to force being
But you know what's better than being like, being lonely alone is better than being lonely with people. Because
yes.
when you're lonely
yes.
with a group yep. of people, like I hung out with a group of guys yeah. for a couple of years.
Right.
And every time I hung out with them, I would be like, holy fuck.
You're like watching yourself in the third person.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not like, enjoying this.
This is
like,
not fun. And then yeah. you drink and it's just like.
So be patient. Like, know there will be lonely times for sure. And there will be hard times, especially if you're taking the leap to move to a new city or like to move to a city at all in general. And like, it is really hard, but it's so worth it to stay true to yourself and take your time and really, really find the people who you can be true with. It, like, it really does make your life so much better.
Absolutely. And then the last thing I'll say on this is just to be nice. It's something that's done. Yeah. 31 years old, and I've like now realized I was never a mean person, mm-hmm. but I've now realized the value of making people feel good about themselves. And it sounds really corny, but that Maya Angelou quote, people will forget how – what is it people will forget? Hold on. I'm
gonna, but they'll remember how you made you feel. Something like that.
And it sounds corny, but it's like that Maya Angelou quote, people will forget what you said, they'll forget what you did, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. Like, that's true.
Very true.
You're a nice person, you'll attract other nice people. Mm-hmm. If you're a dick and you're pretentious – and you're a social climber, which is what happens a lot with gay people, or they want to hang out with people who look a certain way or act a certain way. Shit attracts shit, and goodness attracts goodness. So mm-hmm. be a good person, be nice to the people you grew up with, and everything will happen in time.
Yeah, keep an open mind. Good things will come your way. Final note, too. I've seen enough Datelines. When you are traveling and you're out by yourself, please let someone back home know what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Drop. How did that names.
Did you ever have any close calls with, like, not close calls, but you ever got scared?
Not that I know of.
You have been to war, baby.
Yeah, not that I know of. But, I mean, I've definitely put myself in countless risky situations that were very stupid.
Like what?
But, like, going out in a city I don't know and getting way too drunk with people I don't know, like, gruffer dudes and blah, blah, blah. But always I have my one cousin who I'm always like, here's the names of the people I'm out with. Here's kind of the last bar I'm at of the night before I brown out. See ya.
Brown out.
You know, so.
Do you share location with anyone? My little sister shares her location with my mom.
Hiking. When I go hiking, I'll always have, I always have an anchor person to let them know, here's my basic plan for today. If you don't hear from me by 8 p.m., give me a call. If I don't answer, maybe panic a little.
Isn't that crazy to think? I've never once thought in my life about my safety.
Getting date
like lines. As a woman, like just like as a woman to think about that.
Yeah.
Like when I found out my sister was sharing her location with my mom, I was like, "What?" I was like, "Why?"
Oh,
and then she took it away because my mom abused it, which is great. But I've never once gone out and been like, "Oh, I might get raped or I might get beaten up or killed." There's been like twice in my life where I've been like, "This is a little bit sketchy." One was walking on 125th and Lex from my ex's place.
Yeah.
From night, and I see, like, I walk by the train station.
Yeah.
To go to the next one because it was closed. There's these three dudes walking behind me, and they're like closing in.
Feel it in your bones.
Closing in. I like, I'm getting chills. I like took, I took my AirPods out. I was like, put my hood down. I was like, here we go.
Yeah.
I was like, this is it. This is the day it happens. I'm about to get mugged.
Yep.
And then I just power walked my lanky ass away.
You're so
from
lanky.
Them.
They tried. They were sprinting to keep up, but you're so lanky you could speed walk away.
I did. They were like, Jesus Christ, he's an alien.
They're like, look at this nerd. We'll leave him alone.
That was the only time I've ever been actually scared, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have been killed in P-Town.
For sure.
I was so drunk. By the way, when I left P-Town that time, the most athletic accomplishment I've ever had in my life was riding a motorcycle home that hungover.
Oh my God. Kate, in the summer in August? Forget
it. It was raining. I was going 80 miles an hour.
I hate you so much.
I was going 80 miles an hour down the thing, hovered over on the gas tank with one arm like this, and I was literally thinking to myself, I go, if I die, I don't care. I go, it doesn't matter. I set the cruise control on 90 miles an hour.
You went to
and
sleep.
I go, this is it.
Piece of shit.
I woke up naked on my bed.
Uh-huh.
It was overlooking like the brunch.
With a motorcycle in your living room.
With a motorcycle in my living room. It was overlooking like the brunch area.
Yeah.
So people could see my naked ass there.
Yeah.
And I woke up just in a pile of sweat. And I was like, why? Why? Keep in mind, this was less than a year ago.
Yeah.
By the way. But I'm much more mature now.
I love that we ended that segment in such a lovely way, but then we circled back to it real quick to be like, but murder, hangovers, and butts.
What's the most hangover you've ever been? That was a top five for me.
Most hungover I've ever been.
Fuck the news stories.
Oh my God. Most hungover I've ever been. I've had a few real doozies. One was, this maybe possibly was a red flag, the night before my rehearsal dinner for my wedding. My cousin.
So
two nights before my wedding, my cousins took me out in Philly, and my aunt Peg had dropped by my cousin. We were all staying at my cousin Pat's house in the city.
Oh, she's a gem.
City. Aunt Peg dropped by with three containers, like 120. I love
these. Let me guess. Hold on. Wait, let me guess. Jello shots.
No.
Okay.
Double fried Cajun hot wings. Okay. They're my favorite thing in the world. This place, not just wings, makes it down to Delco. She swings by with these double crispy Cajun hot. We go out and I'm like, it's my last hurrah. I proceed to get like so incredibly fucked up and beyond. And then I eat like probably 50 double crispy fried Cajun hot wings. So the next day I'm supposed to go back to my house, get all the final things ready for the wedding, go to the rehearsal dinner, and I'm vomiting. There was like bones coming out of my head. Like, she ate the bones.
You're eating bones?
I was like eating, like just the tiny ones, I think. I was like, because I think like vague recollections are me being like, hey, watch this. And then my cousins being like, don't eat the bones. And me being like, I'm going to eat the bones. And then like me laughing as I ate the bones. Very dangerous.
Did you eat at the rehearsal dinner?
Did
everyone know you were, the worst part about a hangover, like a really bad one, is when people know.
My mom, your family knows. Was like, are you serious? Really? Are you serious right now? Yeah, that was rough. I look like a ghost in all the pictures. Another time was, this is horrible. I can't believe I'm gonna say this out loud. Oh, this makes me sound like such a piece of shit. My grandma, who I love.
If you're about to tell me a funeral
on the planet.
Kate, no. Okay,
more than anything on the planet. She passed away, and so the whole family came into town, and the night before her funeral, a bunch of us, we, like, it's like a wake. You get together, you celebrate, you share memories, but we all got a little carried away. And
you got the most carried away?
All my cousins were in town, and we all got carried away. We stayed at my brother's, and my brother lived in Camden at the time. He was going to law school at Rutgers.
Camden is like the worst city in the entire country, isn't it?
Yeah, the downtown's kind of we go to this bar downstairs.
They have microphones on the light post to,
for the bullet,
for the yeah. gunshots. But anyway, go ahead. You go downstairs.
Well, so me and my cousins are out and about in Camden, and I think this was after the funeral now that I think about it. So it was kind of like a wake that escalated. And I remember playing Who Let the Dogs Out on repeat on the jukebox in Camden. And then the next morning, because a bunch of family and stuff were in town, we were supposed to go bridesmaid dress shopping for someone in the family. And like, I was a bridesmaid. My other cousin was a bridesmaid. We're in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, this cute little boutique town. First of all, my one cousin, who's like my partner in crime, she was on the toilet like, with like hungover diarrhea as I just pushed her cheek to the side and was like vomiting in the same toilet.
You puked in on her shit?
I couldn't find the trash can. Anyway, this was, and then, so my other cousin, to take us dress shopping for bridesmaid dresses, we're in Cherry Hill. They put the dress on me. I stripped down naked in the room and was like, okay, someone come in and put the dress on me. Like, I couldn't even put the dress on. I have them put the dress on me. I'm wearing this beautiful bridesmaid dress. And then I run out the front door and I puke right out front of the...
In the dress?
In the dress.
Kate.
Of the wedding dress shop. And then my cousin, who's like my partner in crime, who was on the toilet when I was puking, we went to get her like a smoothie and she puked up smoothie in the bride's car.
We went to get her a smoothie. That's so funny. A smoothie is like the last ditch attempt to fix a hangover. Yeah. I'm so good at fixing my hangover now. God. A smoothie.
Those are horrible stories. They're not good stories.
No, they're fantastic. I have so many. I'll like get like flashbacks of what my worst hangovers are every once in a while, and I'll just start like laughing. You ever been to the hospital for drinking?
No, but I should have. I should have a couple times.
I got so hungover once going to the college in my hometown when I was living there. I scream for my mom while I'm in bed. I go, Mom! Keep in mind, I'm 22.
Yeah.
I go, get me saltines. I need water and saltines.
Yeah.
She goes, you did it to yourself.
Yep.
I go, Mom, you don't understand. If you don't get me water, I'm going to die. I was like, this isn't like a joke. Yeah. Like, I'm hungover. She goes, I'm going to die. She goes, well, you'll die then. So I begged my brother. He took me to the hospital. They gave me like 3 liters of fluid in my arm. Oh, it was a fucking disaster.
To me, this is like how, like this childbirth thing, like 9 fucking months of this like agony and then the birth itself. And then people forget and they do it again. That's to me like bad hangovers too. Like I've had probably 10 hangovers in my life at least where I'm like, Like, I look in the mirror and I'm like, you need to make a change. You're never drinking.
You ever look
again.
In the mirror and cry?
Oh, for sure, Pat, please. Hello. Never look in the mirror and cry. Still do.
I did this morning.
But, I mean, like, hangovers where you're like, I need to make, like, the Michael Jackson. I'm looking at the mirror.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to make a change. And then 2 minutes later, somebody's like, you want to go out tonight? And you're like, yeah.
Okay, that was me on Saturday.
You just forget so quick.
With that fucking devil John Feidelberg. Yeah. And Casey, I go, listen, I was out with you guys last night. I can't do it again. And then 8 p.m. rolls around, and it's like, let's have a cocktail. I realize we're making ourselves sound like the biggest
the
pieces
biggest
of shit right
pieces
now.
Biggest pieces of shit.
I had a good story to tell you, too, and now I can't remember what it is.
Hangover story? Worst hangover?
I think it was a fucking hangover story. But I'll tell you what. That P-Town story, and the worst part was I got home. Imagine – oh, I was going to give you my hangover cure. Imagine me walking into a – I hadn't showered.
Okay.
I'd sweat through all my clothes. Yep. I thought I lost my motorcycle. I was like, where is this? But I got home. My mom was like, you piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
It was my birthday present to myself, baby.
Yeah.
But we're all going to do healthy March. What's your hangover? My hangover cure right now is before I go to bed, I'll get a towel because I know I'm going to sweat.
Yes.
So I'll get a towel. I'll put it in the bed. I'll get a nature juice. And then I'll drink the nature juice when I get up. I'll get from the bodega like one of those shitty little fake apple pies.
Mm-hmm.
And then a Kit Kat. And then I put my feet in cold water. And that's what fixes my hangover.
Whoa. I'm very specific to if I'm near a Wawa, that's the best case scenario. I get a pork roll, egg and cheese sizzly, a coffee milkshake, junior chicken salad, and then honey hot cheese curls and a Wawa iced tea. Half and half diet.
Does it work?
Yes. For me, yes. Slowly but surely. But I've had hangovers where I couldn't eat for like 2 days.
Ugh.
God, we're bad people. I'm going to be a mom.
Speaking of bad people, I'm going to be a mom. Dr. Seuss is getting canceled. You hear about this shit?
I did. So I've seen it in the news, but I didn't quite... It was his own family, right? That was like, hey, we got to change some things.
No, six Dr. Seuss books won't be published for racist images. If I Ran the Zoo and To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street are two of them. They're basically stopping the publishing of these books because of racist imagery. I think one of them is like a Japanese dude with like a bright yellow face. The other books are McElliot's Pool, which should be canceled. It's about black people not knowing how to swim. Oh, Beyond a Zebra, which is so fucked up. Oh, Beyond a Zebra, Scrambled Egg Super, and The Cat's Quizzer. Thoughts on this? So before you get into the thoughts on it, keep in mind Dr. Seuss had addressed these, that like when he wrote these way back in the day, this was like regular stuff to say. And he's like, oh, yeah, if I'll do it again, like I don't think that anymore. So he's since addressed it, and now, all these years later, people are creating an uproar about it. Would you read your kid Dr. Seuss?
Yeah, I would. I would.
It's a hell of a transition, huh? Between hangovers and this?
I think definitely I don't see any problem with if they could just change the images, because I also would imagine that if you are a parent or a child of one of the races that's shown in these lights in these books, like probably not fun to have to read that. But also then to explain to my kids that that's not, you know, that's not the correct. I don't know. I think it's time to maybe switch the book up a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, I'm for it. The only reason I mentioned this is just because it was like the biggest story going around right now. And I think it was his stepdaughter, one of his sons or his stepsons or grandsons was for changing the book.
Yeah, I don't
see
why not.
I'm just over people talking about canceling and changing things in general. That's why I wanted
like,
to
why
bring
is it
that
such
up.
A big deal to change it?
Yeah, exactly. Why is it such a big deal to change it? Before we get out of here.
Especially if he admitted, if Dr. Seuss himself admitted, like, hey, that was wrong.
Also, Dr. Seuss, I thought he was like 1800s.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at some of the images now. Yeah, I think time to change it. For sure. I don't know if I would read those books to my kids.
What are the images? Flip your screen around. Let me see.
It's like blackface.
Let's get rid of the blackface.
Exaggerated lips and eyes and nose. Like, yeah, no, I think it's time to change that up. If you're upset about that, you clearly aren't.
Go fuck yourself.
You don't have to have like a little black child on your lap reading them this book and showing them this. I can't imagine that. So yeah, change.
Also, aren't kids into like who's reading their kid Dr. Seuss? Isn't it like all about Paw Patrol now?
You know what I am obsessed with?
What?
Don't Let Pigeon Drive the Bus.
I've never heard of that.
Oh,
one.
Buddy. It's a whole series that start the first book in the series is I have the whole series ready to go for this little fella. But this bus driver basically is like talking to you, the reader. And he's like, hey, I got to step away from the bus for a minute. Do me a favor. Whatever you do, just don't let that pigeon drive the bus. And as soon as the bus driver walks away, the pigeon's head pops on the next page. He's like, hey, you got the keys to the bus? And the pigeon spends the whole book trying to convince you to let him drive the bus. He's a real shady little character.
What's the lesson?
That he's you
doing
just
the right doing the right thing.
Doing
the
right thing and not letting the pigeon drive the bus.
It's so funny, children's books. I have a friend who teaches in Connecticut. Kindergartners, and it might be preschool, first grade, kindergarten,
yeah,
and they're learning how to read, and so every week they have a mystery reader in,
mm-hmm.
and they pop up on Zoom, so one day she and me be the mystery reader,
yeah,
and all these kids are sitting there, okay, Mr. Pat is here, and so I'm like reading this book to them, and I'm like, I'm laughing as I'm reading this book,
yeah,
because it's so ridiculous, the kids are so enthralled, and it's just all about lessons.
What book was it?
Oh, it was like some, Anne gave it to me, it was something about like a dog who didn't fit in, and it was like being nice to the dog.
It's about a hungover man on a motorbike coming back from P-Town.
Yeah.
The moral is hold on to the handlebars. Don't let go.
What was your favorite childhood book?
It's a little known one. It's called Tony and the Tomato Soup, and it's essentially like the Chocolate Touch, but for – or the Golden Touch or the Midas Touch, but for tomato soup. This little girl will only eat tomato soup, and there's a storm that comes one night, and everything she touches, like – she floods the house with tomato soup. It's this big.
I was a big Eric Carle guy.
Oh, big colors guy.
Rainbow fish. Can I finger paint, Mom?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Let me finger paint.
I love it.
What else did I like? I like Where the Wild Things Go. Where the Wild Things Grow.
Where the Wild Things Are.
Where the Wild Things Are. Yeah. Where the Wild Things Grow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Those are two good ones. Dr. Seuss is one of those guys who feels like someone who should have been from like the 1700s, but he died in 1991.
Whoa.
Picasso was another one of those guys. Picasso was like around like in the 50s.
Yeah, you don't realize it.
That was weird.
It's one of those things where it's easy for you to be like, oh, cancel culture, but when you're not the one being depicted.
Yeah, exactly.
If that was you being depicted in some sort of way, you would want it changed too. So I
change the book, yeah. Move on. Another big story that I found was this Manhattan drag race. This Manhattan drag queen is running for city council, and he's raised 6 times the amount of money as all of his other opponents.
Holy shit.
His name is Alan Cummings. He's a working drag queen, and he's running for Manhattan's 7th District Council, covering Harlem, Hamilton Heights, and portions of Washington Heights. He's raised $236,000 so far. It hasn't been that wrong, so I thought that was a pretty funny story. He's been campaigning in front of Stonewall. He's been campaigning all over the city. I'd love for him to do his job in drag. I don't know if he will, but that was a pretty interesting one as well.
Hey, you know how to put – politics is a show, and if anybody knows how to put on a show, it's drag queens. So.
Absolutely. Oh, another thing that I found last night, back to the drinking, there's this app called Beer Buddy. Have you heard of that?
No.
So there's this app that my friends showed me about. It's called Beer Buddy, and it's essentially Snapchat, but it's like a Snapchat map, and you can open it up to the public or like just your friends, and you click on the map, and it'll show where like people are, and you click on it, and it shows them drinking. And so you go and meet up. It's the coolest thing ever. You go and meet up with these people. And, like, you can drink with random people. Are they drinking beer? Are they drinking wine, red, white, liquor, whatever?
Yeah.
So if you're alone,
that's
you want to go
awesome.
Meet up with some strangers.
I like that. There you go.
I thought that was pretty cool. Other than that, I think that's all we got for this Thursday. Kate, you got anything else? I hope you're here next week. I hope you don't give birth over the weekend.
I kind of hope so, too. I've been enjoying. First, I was like, I want this to hurry up. Because I kind of do. You know, I can't wait to meet him. But at the same time, I'm also trying to remember, like, enjoy these last couple weeks. The last of your life where you're on your own.
Yeah.
You get to go into the city, grab your smoothie, walk a couple blocks, enjoy the city because I love me some alone time. I do. So
isn't that crazy to think?
Yeah.
This is it. The rest of your entire life from now until when you die in your 40s.
Yeah.
This is
43.
This is terrible.
So I got another 10 years and then that's it.
No, it must be just a mind fuck, huh?
I'm fucking pumped. And again, I'm not falling into the cookie cutter parenthood thing where I'm like, oh, life is over, blah blah blah, like I'm still gonna do people laugh at me when I say it. They're like, oh, you think blah blah blah, but you really can make, you know, still
look
live
at large
an ideal life. Right. There's, I know couples out there, I know parents out there who I'd like to emulate, who like still live their fucking lives. And I think I'm going to do that. I'm still going to get away, go on my trips, do my things. I'm going to be a piece of shit mom. I'm going to be selfish. So, yeah.
Well, I can't wait to have you back. It's going to be great. So thank you to everyone for listening. We are putting out interviews and episodes on YouTube. Those are coming out every Wednesday as well as every Saturday. Are going to be some old ones from over the summer. Thank you to everyone who listened. Be sure to subscribe. Leave us a comment if you can. Those actually help a lot. And we'll see you all on Tuesday. Bye.